Every Woman is a womanist show, scratch that, feminist show, about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated. And Happy New Year to all of you out there. We are
happy ho-ho.
We are here wanting to start off talking about some of the resolutions that we want to make for 2015. And on the top of that list is to not shy away from the word feminism. We've been using the word womanist in our show description for quite some time now. And Sharon had a very good reason for using that word. Would you like to?
Well, because Alice Walker said many years ago that womanist is to feminist what purple is to lavender. So I thought womanist was a good word to use, and that perhaps people could embrace that more than they could feminist. But to turn our back on feminist hasn't helped to bring that word to the front to help people say it.
Yes, and people are turning away from the word feminism and the word feminist with surprising regularity. We're seeing it in pop culture. We're seeing it in many places where people think for some reason that the word feminist is controversial. And so we want to change the way we're approaching this and talk about the word feminism and use the word feminism. And although that quote about womanism being to feminism what purple is to lavender is wonderful, in all practicality, that hasn't caught on.
I have a quick question. What is our password to get into the internet here? It's free radio. Do you remember what it is? No?
No, no.
Oh, my gosh. It's, okay, we won't be using that, evidently. Okay, why can't I come up with our damn, oh, okay. All right.
We're talking about feminism.
We're talking about feminism.
Well, and I did you hear about this gal? Her name is Kaylee Cuoco Sweeting, and she plays Penny on Big Bang Theory, and she is the number one paid woman on television in America. And she was interviewed this week, and she was asked, "Are you a feminist?" And she said, "No. I cook dinner for my husband 5 nights a week.
Okay,
so does that mean that our younger, I'm assuming she can't be more than 30 or 35. Does our younger generation of women feel like us cooking dinner means we're not feminists? What about women who like to cook? I mean,
well, and once again, that goes back to the definition of the word feminist, and nothing right. in the definition of feminism is there will not cook, can't cook, you know.
Or wait on a man. I don't know. You know, I still think we need, as feminists, part of being a good feminist, if we can define that, is recognizing the rights of all women to do what they enjoy. And I would say if you enjoy taking care of someone, whether it be a man or whoever, that you should be allowed to do that, and that certainly wouldn't exclude you from being a feminist and speaking out on behalf of women and their issues and equal opportunity and the like. To me, equal opportunity means we also acknowledge the likes and dislikes of those who are fond of things that maybe we aren't.
Yeah, equality means
right,
that you have the freedom to choose how you want to live your life. And I think for people who haven't experienced sexism, and unfortunately that is about half the population hasn't experienced sexism, where it's
would
hard.
That be the male population?
Well, no, because remember, we've had this discussion before. I've told that when I was a teenager in the 60s and feminism and women's rights first came to our cultural front and everyone was paying attention, and I didn't get it because I had been raised by such a liberated mother and a father who gave her respect that I had no idea that women weren't treated as well as they should be on such a large scale.
Until you got out into the world.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
Until it becomes personal, even women in
college. It's never really
college.
Become personal for me. I mean, on a large scale, like, I'll tell you, for me, when I have to have my car worked on, and I have this argument with my husband all the time, they talk down to us. And
right.
Many mechanics treat women like we're stupid, we get ripped off.
Oh, that's called mansplaining.
Mansplaining. Right. You're right.
Okay.
I think we've all been affected, but some in a larger scale than others.
I personally like when I am the one who the mechanic was initially talking to, and then it's evident that they're not going to make their upsell, and then they turn to my husband with this look of, sir, your wife is hysterical.
Yes. Sir, your wife really doesn't get this.
Yeah. Can you contain her?
She went outside for a while.
And it's like, well, you didn't just lose an upsell, buddy. You lost the whole deal.
Well, I am stunned that someone would think that because she cooks dinner for her husband, she's not a feminist. I mean, because she's out in the work world making top dollar, I mean, she is an iconic person to show
right.
that women can be paid equally, if not more, than males.
She has since apologized. I think it was just last night I saw where she had issued an apology and said that her statement had been taken out of context. So at least there was some consciousness raising that came out of that statement.
Consciousness raising, that's an important thing.
Cultural consciousness raising.
Well, I think that the statement was taken out of context, because when you remove the word feminist and replace it with one who believes that genders are equal, people are like, oh, well, of course I didn't mean that we should mm-hmm. be unequal. I just meant that I'm not a feminist, which is...
Well, I read the whole interview and I would not really agree with her, but... I think it's nice that she came back and she realized that her statement was
erroneous, stupid,
not thought-provoking, inflammatory.
Well, yeah, I think that is one of our... I think that's a noble resolution to...
I like that.
...to go for this year, is to not shy away from the word feminist and feminism, and to not let those around us shy away from it, because if you don't believe in equality, then you really probably aren't being a very decent person there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is about equality.
Feminazi.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah.
The ones that will shoot the guy if he touches the door.
That's a whole nother show, though.
But that's also one of the stereotypes that allowed them to make the word feminism a bad word.
That's right.
You know.
Brought that on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have never...
Told
a man he couldn't open the door for me, or I mean, that's just ridiculous. I opened the door for men.
I have told a man who I opened the door for, who tried to do the weird, put his arm over my head and like do this weird contorted twister thing to do everything humanly possible to avoid walking through a door that I was holding open, that they needed to just get over themselves and walk through the door.
Right. A lot of plumbing issue, thank you.
I do think we need to call attention to people when they make sexist statements. And you know, a word that I particularly... We talked about the Guardian article that came out this week that made mention of the fact that there were some wonderful things that had happened this year for women.
There were, and I think that we should also talk about LGBT rights, because those are connected to my idea of feminism and what we should be working for. Those aren't two separate issues.
Right.
But of course, I'm of the side that is shocked that LGBT rights are being discussed before the ERA is passed. You know, 30 years ago, you never could have convinced me that would ever happen.
Yeah, I
applaud
it. I think that I am at the point where I'm really applauding all the progress being made for LGBT rights, but I feel like we need to get louder about the women's right.
Yes.
There's a lot of college students now, women, who think it's already passed.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I think 70% of the population.
You do not hear that right. Remember, Sharon, when we were at UMKC last year, we had a table there at an event.
That's right.
For National Organization for Women, the local chapter. Mm-hmm. And I don't even remember how many young people walked up to us and said, "What's now?" They had never heard of it.
Right. The National Organization for Women mm-hmm. is like an organization nobody's heard of, and they did so much in the 70s mm-hmm. for women's rights. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it would be a good thing to introduce our guests, by the way. We have Amy Bell, of course, co-host of Every Woman. I'm Sharon Lockhart, and to my left is Eva Bett, who is a student and with the AAUW, and then Winnie Weinberg, who is... Oh, Weinrich. I know that. I don't know. Weinberg Dodge. That's what it is. Winnie Weinrich, who is the Kansas City chapter branch president of the AAUW, here to talk to us about the projects they have going on locally and nationally. And, of course, Ann Pritchett, who is actually an associate co-host on Every Woman and a good friend of KKFI's and union leader in union leadership and school teacher. So we are talking about women in college. Actually, what I understand is women in college aren't feeling the oppression until they get out of school, because when you're in college, they're marketing to you.
There's solid. Title IX protections as well that are still I don't know what the right word is, but respected, enforced, considered.
I know personally as a student, one of the things that I've learned through working that I didn't learn as a student is that we need to learn how to... That we need to learn how to negotiate, because unfortunately that's not something that we are encouraged to do. Many women don't understand that that's how a lot of these men get the higher pay, is because they're negotiating their salary. We've mm-hmm. just been conditioned to do
right,
or to accept whatever they give us and not realize that if we actually say something, we can get more.
Well, they're also saying that since women now are making the majority of the college degrees, that eventually we should see more pay equity because they have more education.
But one of the issues is that wages have been lowered for men. You know, you mentioned yesterday, Amy, that... women now, the millennials, were seeing more pay equity than at any other time in history, but it's like startup jobs, and the fact of the matter is that wages have been lowered across the board pretty much, that there hasn't been a keeping up with inflation.
Right. Wages.
Yeah, and men's wages are lower.
The pay gap is ridiculous, especially graduating out of college where you've already got $20,000 worth of student debt.
Oh, it's more than there's teachers I work with who make house payment size student loan payments every month, $700-$900
exactly.
a month,
exactly.
and they're in debt way over $50,000.
Right.
It just blows my mind.
Or they can't even get a job in their field.
$50,000 right. is kind of on the low end of a lot
right.
of people
well,
that I know.
Yeah.
Isn't that awful?
Yeah.
And
poor babies.
You know, then. Especially it worries me when you see women and men that are in the millennial generation that are going for higher education degrees and who have the very wonderful goal of teaching at the universities. There's no tenure track.
Right, the adjunct professor game. I know more people who are doing that now, too, because it used to be a lot of teachers would retire and then teach in a university.
Uh-huh.
But now more and more people are in the position of being an adjunct professor, where basically you just work for a low salary and you don't get any benefits, right?
Right.
And no tenure.
And don't know if next semester your class is even going to be scheduled, so you may not even have a job from one semester to the next.
And
that's
yeah,
drive me up
for men and women. It's the job market is just pretty.
Well, and in teaching, there's this movement, and it didn't die with the defeat of Amendment 3 in Missouri in November. It's coming back. There's a senator by the name of Emory And he has filed a bill that would basically do what Amendment 3 was going to do, was take tenure, which is really due process, away from all teachers in Missouri, and attach their evaluations to student and pay to student test scores.
Oh.
Which, you know, there's so much research. I get tired of talking about this because there's so much research supporting why that's not a good idea. And the few places it's been tried, it hasn't worked.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they still, I guess, I think the public deserves and wants a better accountability of the expense of public monies. I think that's where all of this comes from. So maybe we as government workers and taxpayer servants could speak out more about what how we do spend their money. Because I think it's well spent, personally. Of course, I'm very biased on this topic.
Well, one of my concerns about the disappearance of tenure is that we seem to have academics who are kind of strong-armed, maybe explicitly or implicitly, to not speak out and be activists. And we see a big disconnect between the academics and the activism, especially on things like feminism, because our academics, without tenure, if they're out at a protest, then the university says, well, that doesn't represent the university well, that doesn't represent our school well, we're just not going to sign you on for next semester.
Let's remember that tenure is protection from the politics of education.
That's right.
So in my situation, working for a public school district, this would prevent the angry parent, and I've taught 35 years. I'm sure there's more than a couple parents who really didn't like me. I mean, personality clashes happen. Well, let's say one of them got elected to the school board where I work and decided to get me fired because I do work for that school board. You know, the superintendent is my supervisor, but the school board is my employer. They run the agency that employs me. And so theoretically, without tenure, that could be a possibility. And I think I've said for years that most people run for office because they're angry about something, and a lot of them start with school board seats. So it's really a very dangerous road to go down in my perspective as an insider in public education. We just don't need that.
Well, and a lot of, I would think that there would be a lot of differences in opinion with parents on how
exactly,
kids should be treated.
Curriculum,
you're kind of having to fit the greatest number into one system, and there's just bound to be people that are like, well, I don't want that to be the way my child is brought up.
Yeah, the collective conscience in terms of what we should be providing our children has changed. That's part of our, it's part of the reason that teachers don't get respect the way we used to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in education, brings us, speaking of getting a higher education, school teachers were like the first educated people, weren't they? I mean, that could actually work until they got married.
And
anyway,
women. Remember, like, Little House on the Prairie, which I'm so biased. That story told us so much about life in the 1800s in this country. It's amazing. And Laura was selected to be the teacher because she was the smartest in the class. And that's what they did. They would zero in on those really smart girls. And the boys would quit school before high school graduation because they needed them to work. And we didn't have child labor laws then either. And most of them worked on family farms back then, which is completely different today. But anyway, that one smart girl would be labeled as the teacher. And then once she grew up, so many of these girls were teaching when they were 17, 18 years old.
Yeah.
In a one-room schoolhouse, which I can't even imagine how complicated that was.
And the American Association of University Women was formed in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm. About the same time.
Yes. That's correct.
And That is amazing, too, how that group has evolved. We were talking about initially perhaps it was a sort of an upper crust, sort of an organization for women who had achieved this high level to get an education, and how they've evolved over the years and that they've just stood for women's rights. And you might want to take it away and talk a bit about that, Winnie.
Okay. The American Association of University Women, or AAUW, was actually founded in 1881, and it's now the nation's leading organization advocating equity for women and girls. The national membership is over 170,000. It seeks to advance equity for women and girls through advocacy, education, philanthropy, and research. There are 1,000 branches and over 80 colleges and university partner members nationwide. Here in Kansas City, we were founded in 1893, and our branch has a digital archive of our newsletters where you can discover we're very up to date at auwkc.org. And there are meaningful projects we use to support education and equity for women on all three levels, locally, statewide, and nationally. Among our longstanding local projects is the 100 High School Girls Scholarships, providing three girls a year scholarships and recognition for their scholastic abilities, and they write essays to, we generally get 10 girls from 10 schools, so possibly we're going to get 100 essays, and we have to boil it down from there. And the top three essays get a scholarship to go on to college. Another local project is the WAGY Grant, that's W-A-G-Y. It was founded by a past president, and it awards yearly local nonprofits whose missions coincide with ours. Last year's recipients were Amethyst Place for their new Encompass mentoring program, Connecting for Good, to buy 43 refurbished computers for women and girls in Kansas City who, after taking Connecting for Good's free classes, are unable to afford the cost of a computer. And the True Light Family Resource Center's Emancipation Station to purchase equipment and supplies for Emancipation Station's Creative Outlet for Women program. These are just two of our local philanthropic ongoing activities. At the state level, most currently, we're completing funding efforts to endow an education research grant initiated by a past local and state president, Elaine Richardson. Examples of research topics in white papers available to the membership are Crossing the Line, about stopping campus violence against women, the gender pay gap, graduating to a gender pay gap, women in STEM fields, which resulted in a very popular report on campuses, Why So Few? Nationally, there's everything from biannual conventions, where we've created new initiatives like space camps for girls, all the way to legal advocacy funding, where we contribute to Title IX plaintiffs' travel and court costs, and the Lobby Corps up on Capitol Hill, sometimes referred to by Capitol Hill as the teal machine. Okay, I would especially like to point out one program that is very pertinent. We were talking about campuses. Eva, would you tell us about Nick Whistle?
Nick Whistle is actually the National Conference for College Women Student Leaders. It occurs once a year in Maryland. You stay at the University of Maryland campus. And it brings together all of the women student leaders so that a lot of us don't realize how many of us there really are. While you're there, you go through all of these different classes or whatever they want to call them at that time. And one of the ones, like I was speaking about earlier, dealt with negotiations. And had I have not had a little bit of prior knowledge from my previous employer, I probably never would have gone into that one because that's just not something that I would have ever thought of being raised the way that I was raised. I was raised, you know, to be very subservient to everybody. So Nick Whistle was an amazing experience for me personally, and I know other people that try to go every single year. So I know our local AUW branch actually offers scholarships for Nick Whistle, and when I went, I actually went with the Kansas City, Kansas Community College branch that's a satellite off of the Kansas City, Missouri branch. So
that's right.
When you say you were raised to be very subservient, and you would you say that your attitude has changed?
I think the further I go through with my schooling and getting involved with AUW and things like that, my attitude doesn't necessarily change. It just evolves. Like, I still have my same core values and beliefs and understandings that, you know, you're supposed to, you know, serve and not, you know, speak. You're just supposed to be there. And I'm gradually coming out of that shell and evolving into, I think, a better person because I'm understanding that I actually have a say-so that matters.
Mm-hmm. Well, and some of that, too, is being polite. And sometimes it's really hard to find the boundary of where being polite ends and giving yourself up begins.
Yeah, that's right. Or in a work setting, and I say this having come through 30 years with the government, the difference between aggressive and assertive, which actually I think women know.
Well, I think the difference between aggressive and assertive is oftentimes whether or not you're talking about a woman or a man.
Right. In other words, it was an education for men, not women.
Yeah.
If you know what you're talking about and you phrase it as a leader, then it will be generally 99% of the time the men that have the problem, not the women.
Well, and other women talk about women as being aggressive.
Can be.
When they mean assertive.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's a cultural thing. I don't think it's just something men do to women or just women do to women. It's something that we've kind of, when there is a woman who's not putting herself into the background, there is still this lingering feeling that that's being too aggressive, moving too far out of this place of the subservience
mm-hmm.
ideal. The and if, even for people who don't think they were raised with those kind of values.
Exactly. Or it could be even an educated woman, not even in a leadership role.
Yeah, I know whenever I was raised, like, I didn't realize that that's how I was being taught was to, like, sit there and just be quiet. I just thought that that's how it was supposed to be. You don't think that, you know, hey, is this the right way?
Well, yeah, when you're a little girl, maybe you think, oh, the kids aren't supposed to be noisy. But then you see all these people saying, what? Then you see a lot of people letting their boys misbehave and saying, oh, boys are just boys. And it's like, no, I would have run screaming around the room if I'd have been given half an inch to go there. You know, I think boys can behave just as well as girls can. And we need to stop just expecting that from girls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you're correct. There's courteous, there's discourteous, there's good parenting and bad parenting, but we are essentially getting to bring us back around to how do we accomplish equality? Are we talking behavior? Are we talking parenting? Are we talking education? Which
yes.
I think
all
really
of those
yes.
Yes.
All
yes.
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 Yes. Which also speaks to what Eva was saying about, yes, there is how you're raised, and then there's the observation the further you go in your educational process, hopefully, where your brain becomes at least reassured enough to get you through these classes and wakes up to, I should have an equal say. I have an opinion. And this is not necessarily supported all over the world, but we need to get busy making sure that it is.
And that goes back to the beginning part of the conversation where we talked about embracing the word feminism.
Yes.
Because it is so all-encompassing. It's not one thing that you can do. It's not one thing that you can change. It's kind of living up to an ideal at all times.
Yes.
And recognizing when you fail to live up to your own standards, when you inadvertently find yourself giving a little boy a pass on behavior when you wouldn't give that pass to a little girl, or when you are seeing a strong woman who's very assertive and thinking, she's mean, she's aggressive.
Or the B word.
Yeah, that you need to change your thinking.
Right.
And that we all kind of come across those moments because we've been raised to think that way. We've all been raised to think that way. So if you're having those thoughts, it's probably normal.
You just got to face it.
Yes.
We see examples of it all the time in society where a man can just absolutely lose his cool, but he will be excused for it and excuses made for him. And if a woman were to do the same thing, it just is not acceptable at all.
Right.
Well, if they could still commit them to the insane asylum, I think they would. They
probably would.
But also, I think,
or burn them as witches.
How do you spell that?
When we have these conversations, I think we absolutely need to recognize the progress that has been made. Because I think back to my own childhood, and I know I've had this conversation with Sharon, and the way women were treated in our society is completely different. When I turned on the TV at night when I was a little kid, and it was a show about a family, the mom was probably in the kitchen cooking, taking care of the house, didn't have a job outside the home, and the dad was the sole supporter, and that's completely changed now. Right. I think, thankfully, that women have more of a role in our in terms of employment. They're more likely to have jobs. Sometimes that can be a problem, but I think that's a strength. And then look at violence against women. I know when I was a kid that men and women could beat up on each other with no consequences. It would have been laughed at in many areas to call the police and ask them to come and intervene. So we've come a long way.
Certainly when women weren't in the workforce, they were trapped in these abusive marriages.
Right.
Definitely. Divorce, of course, rates were much lower then.
And I don't think it's good that the divorce rate is higher, but I think it's good that women are more likely to walk away from those.
But I know I'm divorced because I can support myself, and I'm thankful for that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew women when I was a little kid who were not treated well, but yet they remained in a really unhappy marriage because they wouldn't have been able to survive.
They had no other options.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's go and revisit the wonderful things that we are seeing happening. There is... 2014 seemed like it was a bit of a bad year. We had all of this rape and the abuse, and we had...
Wait a minute. Are you talking about legitimate rapes, or...?
I am talking about legitimate rapes, and the fact that the term legitimate rape exists.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, 2014 in a lot of ways seemed really bad, but... Over and over again, I'm seeing a lot of analysis that 2014 was kind of a banner year for feminism and that we have a lot more to celebrate than we realize. Mm-hmm. So let's take a quick station break and come back to the conversation in the more positive side of what has been happening recently and hopefully will be carried on in 2015.
This Tuesday at 6 p.m. is Transit Talk on Radioactive Magazine. Janet Rogers of Transit Action Network speaks with Mark Brenham, a retired senior policy advisor for civil rights for the U.S. Secretary of Transportation, about how civil rights law and environmental justice impact transit. Join us Tuesday at 6 p.m. on Radioactive Magazine on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Julie Burkhart worked for 7 years with the late Dr. George Tiller in Wichita at the Women's Health Care Services Center. She will discuss reproductive justice, reproductive rights, and the injustices happening now concerning abortion, contraceptives, and birthing rights on this Wednesday's All Souls Forum at noon right here on KKFI.
We're back, and we have Winnie Weinrich with the Kansas City branch of AAUW. And I know your last name is Matt. And your first name is Eva. I was going to say Val. I had that all backwards. Eva Bat and Ann Pritchett, Amy Bell, and myself, Sharon Lockhart, and we're talking about the American Association of University Women and what kind of things they promote for women and what we want to see happen in 2015 for women and just, you know, carry on with the theme of making this another good year for women.
Well, if you all don't mind, I would like to open the phone lines up to see if anybody else has any equality resolutions that they'd like to come in, call in and talk about. I know that we get a lot of men that call and make some wonderful contributions to the conversation, because I think people listen to this and they start to get it because it's a calm conversation. We don't hate you here. We don't want you to feel uncomfortable. We just want to educate, and we want to talk and have a conversation. So the phone number here is 816-931-5534. Again, I promise we won't bite. So call in with whatever concerns that you may have on the topic of women's equality into the new year. So some positive things that have happened recently.
Okay. This is Winnie again. I would like to mention one of the things that AAUW does that is coming home to roost in Kansas City this year is a fellowship grant that happens, I believe, 10 to 12 all over the country. And we are lucky enough here in Kansas City to have one of the fellowship grantees at UMKC. Her name is Adrienne Anderson. She's the 14-15 AAUW Fellow at UMKC. She graduated with a major in electronic engineering, and she's a volunteer at Science Pioneers, was a local organization runner for the citywide science fair, and she was a judge for that last year as well. She also volunteers with Expand Your Horizons, a program for 6th to 8th grade girls. She was able to, with this grant, come to UMKC, fellowship, and begin to apply her electronic engineering minor into a major, using it in the medical field to apply to electronic engineering items for the medical field. So there's that fellowship at UMKC. At KU, we have an international fellow who has yet to speak to us. Adrienne is going to speak to us in January. Also coming, or actually already in place, is a national at AAUW.org blog that's talking at the moment. This week's topic is exploring the gender gap in business, which, of course, brings us back around to we really need to get past the 76 cents on the dollar thing, which is the reason for Kansas City branches, and, in fact, at least Missouri-wide, I think probably countrywide, we, AAUW, doesn't exactly march, goes to state capitals and lobbies on April 14th. For Women's Equality Day, the day that women's salary of the year before actually catches up with men. I don't think I put that quite right, but I think you know what I'm saying.
I get it.
Yeah. I think I also mentioned there are biannual conventions for AAUW. At the last one, which was in New Orleans, we actually generated a girls' space camp, which encourages young ones not even into college yet to go for the STEM field.
Which, tell our listeners what STEM stands
for. Science, technology, electronics, engineering, yes, and math fields.
Typically fields that women have felt like they couldn't compete in, or that they didn't have the...
Well, exactly.
We do have a caller. Oh, we have a caller on the line. Caller, are you there? Could you please state your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, this is Joni, and I know Winnie and Eva.
Are you there?
And Beth, can you hear me?
Uh-oh, we might have lost our caller.
Hello?
Okay. Well, go ahead and call us back, and we can get you back on the air.
Another thing that we're doing, and we're getting a big response from nationwide, depending on the strength of the community partnership, we haven't actually gotten this generated here in Kansas City, but it's going on in California, it's going on in Arkansas, a couple of places on the East Coast, is an actual tech camp where for several days, kids who are not necessarily in high school yet can really hone their interests in the four STEM fields, especially the technology side. And they're being quite successful in convincing younger girls it's okay if math appeals to you, for instance.
One of my happiest experiences in college, I didn't start going to night school until I was 28 years old. Mm. That sounds like it might be your experience, Eva, that you started late or continued going back later in life. And I got an A in introductory algebra, and I was just, it was just the best moment of my life to do that, and it just gave me great hope.
That, right. Confidence.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do we have somebody, Amy?
Well, I want to see if we've got the caller back on the line now. Caller, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We have a ghost in the machine?
I think we do.
Hello. Oh, boy. Well, you were actually talking about going to school, you know, laying out for a while. One of the things that we have found, actually it was founded by a lady who actually flew during World War II and was...
I
Marjorie
think I know.
Reese.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. She founded a scholarship called a reentry, and it was specifically for ladies who, for whatever reason, had to quit school, didn't get to go into college, or whatever, until later. So if there's a gap of 5 to 7 years, this reentry scholarship, which is coming up in April mm-hmm. every year, is awarded to help ladies get back in there and get their degrees.
Hmm.
And it's happening a lot now. Much more than it used to be true, like in the 70s. If you went into school, the only thing that stopped you, well, Vietnam didn't stop my generation because they wouldn't let the girls, you know, fight. But then college didn't cost what it does now.
Oh, my God.
No, when the student loan conversation we were having earlier, oh, no. I was on, my loans were deferred because...
I wish.
My parents wished. I was on loans that I worked off because I was a teacher in a public school that was a Title I school, and
oh, yeah.
was serving children living in poverty. So I basically didn't have to pay mine back. I got 10% a year worked mm-hmm. off. So it was a great program. I went to school for free. As the eldest of a large family, my parents couldn't afford uh-huh. to help me with tuition. But the payments were $5 a month.
Right.
Oh, and, I'm not talking about getting out of college in 1920. This was in the 70s.
Right.
And $5 a month then, I'm going to say, was like maybe $50 a month now. Mm-hmm. It was
right.
easily affordable.
Right.
And that was the idea. Because I remember when I signed on the dotted line in college and said, yes, I'll take this loan, that was explained to me that mm-hmm. part of the – it was for teachers and nurses –
mm-hmm.
And in order to fill those professions, and they wanted the payback to be something that the students would be able to afford. Because you had, like, I think 6 months maybe once you got out of school. Then you had to start making payments.
Oh.
So
right.
if you, like, I had a baby. I did have to pay for a couple of months because I had a baby right after I got out of school and didn't get a teaching job that year.
Uh-huh.
But still, it was very affordable. I never even dreamed of... of making a mortgage-sized payment on that student loan. That just
right.
blows my mind.
And frankly, you know, the 70s to now is not extremely long. I mean, it seems
no,
like
it's not that long.
Well, the
I'm still
inflation
working, so.
With the rest of things doesn't right. equate to what
student
oh, loans have gone up.
Exactly true.
Tuition, my last year of my bachelor's degree was $200 a semester.
Holy moly.
At a public, at Emporia State.
I know, I talk to people who... like, for an entire semester would pay what we're currently paying for, like, one class.
Exactly. Right.
Well, I started college in the early 2000s, and it seems like that was right when...
the zeros got it added?
The zeros
there
got it
go.
Added. Mm-hmm. And every year, It was so much more expensive, and it wasn't just the tuition that went up. The parking permits went up.
Oh, and the textbooks used to kill me.
The books have always been terrible.
As a kid
the
on scholarship, they never gave me money to pay for my books. And that we would share books. And
yeah, but the books never seemed to go up in price like everything else over this time span, because I feel like since I was there when the prices started to balloon. But the parking permits went up. The lunch, the meal tickets went up. The price of that went up. The metered parking, like the parking meters went up. And then the cost of a ticket, if you were parking in the wrong place, went up. The cost of vending machines went up. It was incredible.
Life on campus.
Everything. It wasn't just the tuition. We talk about raising tuition, but tuition isn't the only expense involved when you're on the campus.
Is that a result of reduced funding from the state and federal government, or is it just that funding hasn't kept up with the increase in costs of running a university?
I think it depends on the university. Of course, the ones like UMKC, who are right in the middle of town, there's a lot of civic involvement, as opposed to some of the big state colleges, of course, get more state funding and federal funding, unless...
Well, full disclosure, I was talking about UMKC.
Okay, good. I was about to mention something in Kansas, but I'll leave it alone. but it just, I really do believe that a more urban campus crosses that bridge sooner, out of fiscal necessity, because there's
but they also built a whole bunch of new beautiful the dorm rooms are bad, we're going to build hotel style dorm rooms that are all of a sudden going to make the cost of living so much more expensive for our students, but they're going to be so nice you're going to forget about it. We're going to have a new student center, we're going to build a new this, a new that. I mean, I saw the cost bubble, I also saw spending balloon.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were working on a brand new library with a robot. You know, does your library have a robot? And
for the music archive. Yeah, Chuck
Haddock.
Thank you.
Well, the last time I was there, the robot hadn't reached its robotic arm into the music archives yet, but everything else was by a robot, which a library where a robot is there is a really weird library, too. That was one of those changes that I was like, all right, this is it. I'm done. I'm done with technology. We need to go back to the way things were.
Do the library patrons interact with the robot? I mean, when you go and check your books out via the robot or...
No, the robot is like a... like a factory robot, like the mechanical arm doohickey that just
go get something.
It gets something. It's very mechanical.
I work in an elementary school, and I think our librarian could probably use a robot to help her shelve books. It seems like they spend 90% of their time shelving books.
Well, that's all the robot does.
Well, there you go.
It doesn't retrieve books.
It retrieves and shelves. No, the whole thing is a robot. Yeah. And you can see it through the window. If you want to go down and gawk at the robot, there is a window where you can see this robot going and, you know, getting things off of these giant shelves that human beings don't go into.
I think that's kind of cool. You didn't like it?
It's cool from the outside when you're watching the robot, but when you're inside expecting a library and there's like a robot behind a wall somewhere instead of a library in front of you, it's kind of
disappointing. Yeah, I don't like it when they take people's jobs. That really bothers me.
Well, there's that.
That's always,
you know, I'm sitting here trying to formulate a thought about why was college education increasing 8% a year when inflation might have been running 5 or 4, or as they are telling us now, under 2% a year.
Well, they need more robots.
Maybe that begs for an audit or somebody.
They aren't charging enough for parking.
Yeah. No, they're not charging enough for parking, obviously, and they need more robots. And the students should have, like, you know, hot tubs in their dorm rooms.
No, you're not serious.
I have no idea.
Oh, I never lived in a dorm. No, let's not start a bad
I never lived in a dorm. I'm going to say, I'm moving.
And Eva, where is it you're going to school?
I go to UMKC.
You're at UMKC.
Are there hot tubs in your dorm?
I don't stay on campus. I don't know if there are hot tubs in the dorm room. But
you could complain about the parking, probably.
I was actually really fortunate in all of, like, I bought the parking pass, and all of my classes I could find parking for.
Well, as just a citizen in the city who I've never gone to UMKC, I can't stand at any event there because I have to leave home a half an hour early just to find a place to park. I think it's horrible.
But what about at the new student union?
Yes, there's nowhere to park.
They've got the four-story parking building now.
Well, the fifth floor is not metered, but everything else you have to have a parking pass.
Yeah, no. It's not that close. You know, most of the events are at that one building.
Oh, yeah. And then
you're blocks away from that.
Yeah, then you have to walk a mile after you parked, which
really bad planning. You can tell it's just been hodgepodge together over the years.
We've beat up on you and Casey enough, haven't we?
A lot of it can't be helped, I guess, but I think it's frustrating. Well, tell them they need better signs. I never know which building, because there's no sign on the building.
They need trams.
Or something.
That'd be nice.
But, of course, they'd have to raise tuition for that.
Yes, that's right. That means that parking pass is going to triple.
Yeah. Well, as an AAUW
person.
Thank you. Well, do you have anything else you would like to share with us about your group and how can people join you and what are the qualifications to join?
Well, anything from an associate's up, and if you are a student, there is an e-student
membership,
which essentially is free. There's a, what am I thinking of, a digital... I can't think of it at the moment. Anyway.
So you don't have to attend meetings. You can go online and be a digital member.
You can. And then, of course, you certainly can attend meetings. You mean as an e-student, can you attend meetings? Yes.
Uh-huh.
Can you vote? No.
Okay.
But there's only one vote, and that happens in May, at least in our branch. And that has to do with the election of the board members for the next...
Well, how are you doing with attracting young membership?
Well, now that we have a satellite at KCKCC, we are doing much better than we were. There are active members in the Kansas City branch. There are over 90. And there are active members in the branch that have just come out of college. One of my platforms coming in last June was we need to be as inclusive to the ladies in college and the ladies coming right out of it as we are of the majority of the group that has either retired and come into it or been legacied via their moms, because we were 300 strong in the 60s and 50s. So there's a local history that's really, really strong. But it's just like any other organization. Eventually, you're going to age out.
You have to groom your youngsters.
If you don't keep the funnel open at the other end.
You have to get them actually to get on their feet, out the door, to go do something, to go be a part of something, mm-hmm. rather than just... clicking like on a picture.
Sure. Yeah.
And
that's
feeling
very true.
Like a part of something. Well, and if they have to be a part of something rather than feeling like
a part. If any of you come up with that answer to how to get people involved, let me know.
Yeah. Well, and
can
I know.
Can you find that article on defending dissent very quickly, Amy? Because
the one from The Guardian?
The other article, Defending Dissent. Mary Mosley sent it to me. There's this organization called defendingdissent.org that's talking about our collective lack of successes and how are we failing, and they suggest that it's by not forming a strong offense. It seems like we're always putting a band-aid on something. Mm-hmm. Somebody's attacking us and we're having to go put our finger in the dike instead of promoting a strong offensive tactic.
Well, and her name also reminds me that one of the ways, as you said, to attract or impact to attract younger women is to empower. One of the groups that we spend a lot of time with, partner wise, is not only NOW but the League, mm-hmm. the women, and there's a new group, well, relatively new group in town. It's the UN Women.
Yes,
mm-hmm. and. We're trying to include their activities. We wouldn't been able to do so in our present newsletter because they're going to do an event for the International Women's Day on February 26th. And Mary, I believe, is part of the Big Move Up organization.
Mary Mosley from, yes, I believe she is,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And that one's again, Citizens United.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you think Mary Lindsay. Mary Lindsay,
right.
Move,
right.
To Amend.
Yes.
Move to Amend.
Yes. That's right.
Yes, yes.
Very good.
Can we count her as a good thing about terms of this show and feminism? And,
Mary Mosley?
Mary Mosley and Mary Lindsay, both Marys, for the work that they've done for many years now.
Right. Yeah. All you need to be is on their feed, and you are informed. Thank you.
Right.
And I think that is a big part of getting younger people away from the clicking in out, you know, on their feet, getting involved. Whether it's for advocacy, maybe it's just a reading group or a cuisine group.
Well, and also remembering that we don't have the equality that you maybe think we have.
Yes.
Right.
That we do not have constitutional protection.
No, we don't.
Women's rights are still at the whims of popular opinion,
mm-hmm.
which aren't really rights. Those are...
No. Those are cultural...
Courtesies, essentially.
They're very good.
As evidenced by the gal from Big Bang Theory's statement. I'm so sorry, I can't remember her name. Apologize to her.
That's life.
About not being a feminist.
You know, yes. She doesn't have an educated understanding of the feminist statement as being, you know, everybody is equal.
I have another good news story.
Okay. Always nice.
I don't know if you all heard this, but this gal, Monet Davis, who was the pitcher on the Little League World Series this summer, who got so much attention, she was named as the Associated Press Female Athlete of the Year.
Oh, that's
beautiful. And it's the first time they've named a woman that young.
That's very good.
What is her age?
12 or 13, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
She's young. It's Little League.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could probably continue this conversation throughout the new year, but it is actually time that we tell everybody to stay tuned for Urban Connections with Donna Wolf, and then guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. Thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.